Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this edition of Inside the Stakes. I'm your host, Joe Wilson, along with my co-host, Mark McDonald. And Mark, today, I feel the need for speed.
Thanks, Maverick. I appreciate the intro there. We got to talk with Super Speed Golf today and their co-founder, Mike Napoleon. This is a fun conversation because we got to get in kind of the nitty-gritty about their products. And they've got products for everyone from ranging from age 5 up to guys that are competing for world long drive competitions. And these products are not a gimmick. They have they've done lots of research on their end. They've partnered with TPI to do lots of research. And they're seeing players that use these have average speed gains up to kind of 5%, which is right around that 20-yard mark. And whether you're a beginner golfer or even up to a tour player, 20 yards is massive, Joe. I mean, you could use this quite a bit.
Well, Mark, I could use 20 yards quite a bit. You know, the reality is we all want to hit it further, whether we're a competitive junior golfer or you're 60 years old and you're out there with your buddies. There's nothing like hitting the ball past your friends on the first and second hole and looking back at them and go, why'd you hit there? This is a way to do it. Build your speed. So we're going to put the ball on the first tee. We're going to send it down the first fairway. Sit back, relax. We're coming to you hot with Mike Napoleon from Super Speed Golf.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this episode of Inside the Stakes. We're glad to have a guest with us today, Mike Napoleon, coming from Colorado, representing Super Speed Golf. And Super Speed, something that Joe and I have both used in the past. I recommend it.
You've used it more than I have, let's just be honest. I mean, you're an athlete.
Was an athlete. I have a teaching academy, and I recommend, this is one of the only products that I recommend to every single player, whether they are 7, 8 years old or 80 years old. And it's kind of a unique product where it kind of fits everybody. So we're excited to have you on, Mike. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, Mark, Joe, really happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We're glad you're here. So like I said, this is, I think the golf industry is unique when it comes to training aids. And in my opinion, there are so many training aids that are just trash and gimmicks. And I think this one's unique because, for starters, it works.
Do we get to name the trashy and the gimmick ones, or should we leave that alone for another podcast?
I don't think we need to name those. Well, let's be honest.
I think the Tin Cup, right? That's the greatest movie when we're talking about swing aids. Like when he walks in the trailer and he's got all the little, you know, the eye line thing with the putter. And I go, yeah, this is not one of those, folks. These things are legit.
I think the reason they are legitimate, and Mikey, let's go into this a little bit. You guys have done a decent amount of kind of research, and you've got a nice amount of data. And whether it's you or even some other kind of third parties, have done some research as well. And I think everyone is kind of consistent with what they're seeing.
Yeah, I agree with you, and thank you for those nice comments about the product. I mean, I would look at it this way. Like, what we created with Super Speed Golf was not just a simple training aid. It was an entire training process that really works with a player for years. You know, the physical product that we have is actually very simple, right? The you know, real meat of the information comes in all of the training protocols we've developed and the progression of all of that. And that piece is really, I think, a lot more important than the actual physical product. You know, one of the things that's always been sort of a tried and true belief for me as a coach has been really trying to be as consistent as possible with really good scientific motor learning and performance practices whenever I'm coaching a player. So, and again, some of those concepts kind of are anti-traditional, if you would, you know, think of that. Like, you know, beating balls over and over again is really not the best way to get better at the game of golf. Like, there's better ways to do it than that. So that's something else that we've put into everything we've done with Super Speed Golf, is to make sure that there's that process of discovery learning that happens, and having players identify what it feels like to make the club move faster, and on the other side, what it feels like when it slows down a little bit because they tensed up and did something differently that wasn't as efficient. So that's a major piece. Like, a lot of those kind of more gimmicky training aid type products that are in the industry work specifically on a disproven way of learning called guidance, when we talk about that in motor learning, which essentially forces the player into a position, right? So, like, if you take some kind of training aid or device that forces your body into a certain position, and yeah, absolutely, when you're working with that product, you can swing 300,000 times, and you're never going to mess it up because your body can't move in any different way. The problem is that it's a proven, I would say almost law of motor learning that if you have a guidance device that forces you into a position, and then you take it off and come back 2 days later, it's essentially like you never practiced at all, no matter how many times you've gone through that process. Whereas, types of products or learning practices like what we do with SuperSpeed, where it forces you to solve the problem on every single swing to try to max out that speed and get a faster swing and then have that player remember those feels, actually creates a scenario that's much more positive from just a learning environment for the player.
Mike, where did you guys come up? Obviously, there was for a long time, the old saying, a heavy stick. I guess they were golf clubs that were very heavy. This is very counterintuitive to that, right? It's very light. It's super light and different weights. Where did this idea get birthed, and where did it come from for you guys?
Yeah, we saw it first in baseball, actually. It was back in, I believe, 2012. We heard Dr. Tom House do a presentation at the TPI World Golf Fitness Summit about velo training for Major League Baseball pitchers. So, using these different weighted balls, throwing, sometimes releasing the ball, sometimes holding it, and some different, basic ways that he was theorizing having it affect a rotational sport or swinging sport like golf or hitting as well. And we looked at that and said, wow, this is a pretty big deal. And we started doing some research on that and said, wow, this has been done in track and field sports, sprinting, javelin throwing, hammer throw. This type of training has been done for a long, long time in other sports. And it's like, I wonder why nobody ever really applied it to swinging sports, like swinging an implement, swinging a golf club, swinging a baseball bat, even, started hitting a tennis ball. We'd never really seen specific training in that side in those areas. So that's where we kind of took that, I would say, concept that, we had seen have success all over the world in other sports and really just applied it, figured out how to implement it and apply it to the golf swing to make it as effective as possible for the player. You mentioned the heavy items. I think that was actually a bigger thing that we saw in golf. And it's still in baseball too. People putting on big heavy donuts on the on the bat. I think that was a, let's call it, unproven and now probably disproven methodology of increasing speed for a player. The old saying in baseball, right? It was like, let's put a big heavy donut on the bat. Let's make some swings with that big heavy donut. And when you go back to your normal bat, it's going to feel a lot lighter because you just had to move all this extra weight. Well, the problem with that is that, from a physiological standpoint and a neurological standpoint in the body, we have this process that we have with neuromuscular reaction to a motor program. So whenever you run a motor program in your brain, let's say that's a golf swing, you're standing on the first tee, or a baseball swing, whatever it is, whatever that motor program is, your brain has an expectation of how fast the muscles of your body are going to move for that motion, right?
I have low expectations.
I mean, some people have very low expectations, some people have very high, but neither one way or another, it's a subconscious expectation of what that result is, because your brain kind of goes back and forth with your body and says, okay, did what I expect to happen, or was it different, or did it change, or those kind of things. We have a very active system happening there between our brain and our muscles. Well, what we actually find when you do just those heavy item type deals, and TPI actually did a study on this back, I want to say it was 2014-15, where they actually had minor league baseball players, collegiate baseball players, do a warm-up with a big heavy donut on the bat, had another test group that did two bats and did it. They actually found that on average those players lost up to 30% of their normal bat speed on the first one out of the gate after doing that warm-up, and it took them till the fourth swing back to get anywhere close to what their bat speed was before they did that warm-up. I mean, in the majors, that's ridiculous. I mean, you're already out by the fourth swing, so what are you doing, right?
Right.
So what we found is we knew that was true, and what we kind of started to look at there was, why is that true? And again, it goes back to that neurological connection to our body, right? So if you're swinging that heavy object, your body can't move faster because there's more resistance. So what happens is in just a handful of swings, you're moving slower. So let's say you're at 100 miles an hour and you use that big heavy weighted club, you're now down to 93 miles an hour. We actually find that on average, depending on the amount of weight, but if we just used our red club, the heavy one in our set by itself, we'd actually find that players lose about 7% of their normal swing speed if that's the only thing they swing. Really? So now you're down to 92. Your brain starts to remember that, oh, okay, I'm supposed to go at 92 miles an hour, and it starts to expect that. So that's a real negative piece to increasing speed. We also found, though, that the opposite is true. If you go light first, and you essentially with the in our system, the our lightest club's 20% lighter than the player's driver, we find that players can swing that on average about 18 to 19% faster than their normal swing speed. Same neurological process happens there. We find that in just a few swings, your brain starts to remember and expect that, you know, 18 to 19% faster golf swing, and then actually tries to apply that amount of speed reaction to those middleweight club and even the 5% heavy club in the set, which during our training, we'll see players still swinging that usually about 10 to 12% faster than their normal swing speed. But it's all because of that brain training, that kind of neurological expectation process that, you know, we now call overspeed training.
It's fascinating to think about it, right? It's a weighted stick, and so many training aids, like you said, are guiding you. And really, this is training your brain. It's training your body to go faster and to expect that.
Absolutely.
So you're set. You got a set, and you can buy them a different package because we're going to get into this later on. But for the general product, you've got four different weights: a super light, a light, a medium, and then the red. You said is a little heavy.
Yeah, so any of the sets that a player would purchase would be three clubs. So nobody would use more than three of those sets at any given, okay, or three of those clubs at any given time. You mentioned that yellow or ultralight set. So like the ladies and senior sets, some of the junior sets go with a yellow, green, and blue setup. That's mainly for a player that's using an ultralight driver.
Okay.
You know, because we still want about those same differentials, 20% light, 10% light, 5% heavy. And it's not exact. It can be a little bit of a range around those weights that we've seen to still be in that optimal window for the training. But, you know, if you've got a player that's playing a 290-gram total weight driver, the red club's way too heavy for them, you know, relative to their club. So, like, in the men's set that goes green, blue, and red, that's based around, like, a 315-gram standard men's driver, whereas those other sets are based around lighter weight drivers for those different populations.
And what's great is you guys have this protocol, right, a whole series of how to do not just swinging your predominant, if you're right-handed, right, but also to work the other side of the body. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, so all of our protocols use non-dominant training. I think that's a really important key factor that, you know, is helpful for players. That's another type of training that's been done in other sports for a very, very long time. And really was just never something that the golf world really chose to implement. I mean, heck, like at our golf academies, when we were still running our golf academy businesses, which are still going, we've just got some of the coaches that worked for us now own those. I mean, we had all of our junior golfers swinging both right-handed and left-handed up until like 11, 12 years old. Like, and we'd actually have competitions where they'd go out and play against each other left-handed and stuff. Like, non-dominant training is actually a really important factor for balancing out muscles of the body, activation of all of the different muscles and the different muscle slings that create rotational velocity, biomechanically huge advantages to being able to stabilize segments and create efficient rotational velocity. Yeah, I mean, I can't talk enough about non-dominant training. I mean, it's also probably one of the best ways to prevent lower back pain and injury in the golf swing from just overuse of always swinging one direction. So yeah, that's a big one. You know, the protocols, though, I mean, that's a piece of the protocols. There's a lot more to those as well. We actually have five levels of protocols now for Super Speed Golf. Like, I mean, if you were to go through it nonstop, week by week, it's over a year and a half worth of training that you get, you know, when you buy this product. So, again, that's what I say. Like, it's not – we're not just selling a – physical device training aid that you don't really know what to do with, or there's only one use for. Like, this is just a training product that is necessary to go through the training protocols that we've built, you know, to get that end goal of that improvement. But yes, non-dominant training is a huge piece.
What's so cool and great about it is you can literally use it in your living room, right? If you can, you could potentially just use it in your living room in the off season. You could take it outdoors. You can throw one in the bag. I know our club right now, the driving range is closed because of COVID, and you know there's no way to warm up. Then you get out of the car, you pull that out, and you start swinging on right-handed and left-handed, and it's amazing how loose you get just going to that first tee. I think it's cool to see what Phil's done with these. Talk a little bit about I'm sure you've had connections with Phil and what sure. some of the games he's seen.
Well, Mike, what's really cool is that you've got players all over every tour using these. It's not just a couple big-name players. I would guess on every tour you've got a nice number of players that are using them.
We stopped counting around 700 tour players actively working with the product.
That's it?
But,
that's all you got?
I mean, look, I think on that side, and I definitely can talk about some of the specifics with some of them, but, you know, what we've seen in the industry is that, you know, speed training as a specific process was not something that most, even professional players, had as a part of their normal routine. You know, they had gym programs that were working on all kinds of different important things there, and definitely some of those gym programs worked on ballistic speed and power in different areas there. But as far as like motor program specific speed training for the golf swing, it was really something that even the best players in the world really hadn't been exposed to in a major way. Now, there were definitely players that had. I mean, Phil would be one of them. I mean, he's been working with this type of a program for probably the better part of 7 or 8 years, you know, because he had contact with some of those people, like the guys at TPI and Tom House that were looking at some of this in other sports and working with it there. You know, again, we just kind of cleaned it up and made it easy for people is really the main thing that we did. But yes, I mean, there's players all over the world that have been working with this program and have been getting great results out of it, and they keep working with it because they've had great results. I mean, the other cool piece to mention there is, I mean, we've actually never endorsed any one of those players ever that ever paid anyone to use our products. They're all using it because it's become a staple part of their actual practice routine that helps them get better. So, you know, I think that's probably the coolest part of it for us, especially, is to see all those players adopting it, putting it into a regular part of their routine.
Oh, it had to be so cool. To push it. I think Billy Herschel, right? He's in his living room. He's in a workout area, and he's on his knees, and he's swinging, and there's your product. That's got to feel so unbelievable. I think we were talking before we launched. You guys showed up at the PGA show in what year?
2015 was the very first year we launched it. We launched the product officially at the World Golf Fitness Summit in out at Aviara in San Diego in 2014 was the very first time that we launched it to the market. But yeah, those guys started to adopt this stuff pretty quickly.
5 short years and you guys are everywhere. That's incredible. It's exponential growth.
I think to be everywhere.
Well, what's important to point out is why those professionals are using them. And when we start looking at, I'm a big statistics person, Mark Brody, his book, Every Shot Counts, it goes into quite a bit. By the way, Mark Brody, the creator of the strokes gain statistics, for all of our listeners who haven't heard
of
him.
One of my favorites.
That's right. So Mark...
Math works.
That's right. Mark goes in his book, we're able to quantify kind of yardage what those increases actually mean with scoring differences. And obviously he published an additional 25 yards for a tour player. Is equivalent, or 20 yards for a tour player is equivalent to 3/4 of a shot around. So for a tour player, when they're playing a 4-round tournament, there's 3 shots. And
that is millions of dollars for those players too.
Millions.
Exactly. So I was screwing around yesterday and I was looking at some stats on tour for just the 2019 season. And when you start looking at a scoring average change of 3/4 of a shot throughout a season, like what you said, I looked up kind of where a person was or scoring average, how that related back to money, and exactly what you said. You go from someone who's at 100th in money versus someone who go up to almost top 20. And like what you said, it's $5-6 million sometimes.
Let's take that down a step too, and not just from the professionals, but for the juniors that you guys work with and the junior golf community, and for parents that are listening. You know, 3 shots over a tournament or 2.5 shots over a tournament, you take that off of a stroke differential. When it comes to college, that's hundreds of thousands of dollars in potential scholarships, averaging 75 to 72 to 73, all from speed.
Yep. No, I mean, I can make a great mathematical argument and do in many of the presentations and talks I do all over the world that, I mean, increasing distance off the tee can be the single most beneficial thing to not only professional golfers, but amateur golfers all over the world. And, you know, again, I get some pushback sometimes from more traditional coaches. They're like, well, I mean, the first thing I need to, you know, help people with is, you know, improve how many putts they're getting in a round. I was like, well, yes, but look at it from this perspective. If you help somebody make a 4-foot putt more often, that's a great thing, right? But how many shots out on the golf course does that affect? I mean, because once you make that 4-foot putt, the ball's in the hole and you're on to the next hole, right?
Right.
Like, you give somebody a 20-yard advantage off the tee instead
for
of that.
14 holes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, heck, the par threes count too because you hit the shorter iron into those too.
But, that's a great point.
You
know,
you get 20 yards further down the fairway, that may be as much as a 2.5 to 3 club distance on the club that you're hitting into the green.
Yeah.
That means you're going to hit more greens in regulation. You got to get up and down less. Your proximity to the hole is going to be a lot closer.
Sure.
That means that you're going to 3-putt less. You're going to make more birdies. You know, so it just has this like snowball effect down the hill.
Yeah.
I would actually say, and again, can make a mathematical argument that increasing someone's distance by 20 yards is actually the fastest way to improve their putting stats.
Well, that makes sense. It's proximity.
Exactly.
Like, usually they hit a pitching wedge to versus a 7-iron.
I mean,
Mike, by the way, for 20 yards, what would that equate to from a swing speed?
It depends on where you're starting. Like, if you're at about 100 miles an hour swing speed right now, you know, 5% is going to get you up to about 105. 5 miles an hour in club speeds, loosely, you know, somewhere around 18 to 20 yards more off the tee.
And what you guys are seeing with your program, that's very doable.
That's exactly what we're seeing with our program. Yeah. In fact, over thousands and thousands of data points at this point, average that we see across the board, all populations, is about a 5% gain in effective club speed. That's effective club speed, meaning when you're hitting a golf ball.
So you talked about protocol. So let's say today we start, we open the package and we get one of these out and we're averaging 100 miles an hour. What is that? How long does it take? I'm sure after just immediate, you're getting some benefit out of that. But how long does a protocol system work to where you're seeing that 5 mile an hour pretty consistently?
Yeah, so it actually works in like a series of what we call a jump, a normalization phase, and then a plateau. So basically, you buy the thing today, you go on our website, you go through our warm up, and then you do our level one speed training session. If you were to test hitting a ball before and after that very first session, on average, you're going to see about a 5% jump in swing speed, even though you're probably going to be dead tired even through that 5 to 6 minute training protocol. I mean, it's intense.
And 5 to 6 minutes.
5 to 6 minutes. And if you're doing it right, though, it is like a sprint, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is intense, max intensity kind of work. So we don't want to do it for longer than that, because if you do it for longer than that, it's going to be very, very
– But anybody can do that for 5 minutes. Even me, I can't even get off the couch and do that for 5 minutes.
I mean, we have seen, you know, if you've got somebody that's like 75, 80 years old, like we may reduce the reps down by, you know, instead of doing 3, we might do 2. So might recommend that for you. I'm not sure. We don't know each other too well, but we can talk. But anyway, after that first session, you're going to see that jump of about 5%. Now, if you just do nothing after that and take a break for 30 minutes to an hour, you're probably going to have everything kind of go back to more normal.
Sure.
We haven't had enough time there to prove to your brain that that's the new normal for you, right? So what we see is then over the course of the next 6 to 8 weeks of regular training with the program, and regular training, I mean 3 days a week with a full day off in between before sessions. So if you're looking at that, you're looking at like that, let's say it's a 5 minute warm up and then about a 5 to 6 minute training protocol. We're looking at about 10 minutes, 3 days a week with a full day off in between. If you were to measure the speeds before you did the training and after every single session over that 6 to 8 weeks, what you'd see is that before speed kind of gradually creeps up to about what that jump speed is going to be after the training. At the point of about 6 to 8 weeks for players, they'll enter a plateau phase where the before speeds are going to be that 5% gain, and the after speeds aren't going to be jumping up a lot. So that plateau phase then can last for usually 2 to 3 months worth of the training. Usually in about month 4 to 6, somewhere in there, you'll see another jump. Usually that one averages about 3.5%. Another 6 to 8 week normalization phase, another plateau. theoretically, that pattern of jump normalization and plateau, you know, continues forever with more time in between the jumps and the jumps getting smaller. So there's some diminishing returns on that over time.
But you're talking literally about a 5% and then a 3%. If someone started today, they could have almost a 10% by the end of the season.
I mean, you're talking tour players that have been behind the eight ball at like 106, 107 that are now at 118 to 120. You're talking about amateur golfers that are about to quit the game because their club speed's at 75 and they can't carry force carries of their golf club, and now they're swinging at, you know, 88, 90 miles an hour. You're talking about your weekend warriors that are at 88 miles an hour and haven't been able to put enough spin on a 7-iron to stop it on the green in 15 years. Now, with driver club speeds in the high 90s and being able to stop balls on the green. So, I mean, yes, there's a lot of good benefit there, and it is significant when you look at, you know, if somebody really does dedicate themselves to doing this program, I mean, it can be life-changing for their golf game.
All right, folks, we call this portion of our program At the Turn. I hope you enjoyed that front nine. Our At the Turn is brought to you by our sponsor, Miles of Golf.
Miles Golf has two locations, one near Ann Arbor, Michigan, and one in the Cincinnati area. Both locations are known for their fitting, their famous Cliboratory. This Cliboratory, you've got about every manufacturer you can think of.
Every manufacturer.
And unlike a lot of the fitting places, you're actually hitting golf balls outside.
Hit ball, see ball.
Yeah, so whether it's cold or warm out, you're going to be comfortable, though. You're in the bay, but you get to see the ball fly, unlike most of these fitters. So these guys use the best technology in the business, TrackMan, and they've got every head-shaft combination you could ever imagine, and you get to try them all out at one place.
So listen, when you're on the tee and you're looking down at that driver in that tight fairway and you have no idea where it's going, 90% of the time, the reason you don't have an idea where it's going, that's not the right club or shaft for you. Do yourself a favor. Call Miles of Golf. Get fitted. If you need balls, they've got them. You need tees, they got them. You need a new golf shirt, they have it. Miles of Golf, everything under the sun, do it. Now we turn to the back nine, Mark. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Let's tee it off on 10.
You know, Mark and I have talked about this off podcast, but just personally, I went through some shoulder surgeries about 3 years ago, and I went from playing an extra stiff shaft through that tightening up and before down to the stiff, down to the regular. And I remember after the surgery, I was hitting senior flex, and I was so frustrated with the game. Not that I didn't love it. I couldn't hit it anywhere. And so my scoring is horrific, and you don't enjoy it because you can't play the same tees. You got to move up. It's a totally different game and humbling. And what's been fun is as the shoulders have been healing back and utilizing your guys' product, picking up some of that speed, the game's becoming so much more enjoyable because you guys nailed this earlier. Distance truly matters with that ultimate score.
It matters, but it certainly also makes the game more fun, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, again, like we at our academies, you know, we taught some professionals, but it was mainly like amateur players, right? Honestly, like I kind of believe after doing that for as long as I can, like, yes, if you can help somebody lower their handicap by three strokes, they're probably going to be happy. You help them hit it 20 yards past their buddies that they've been playing with
everything.
For 15 years, like, you're their hero. Like, that's way more
important.
They don't
care. They don't even care what they shoot that
day. Yeah, that's way more important. I mean, obviously, for professional... For professional players, like, it's very important to look at stroke average and all of that because that's their livelihood. But, yeah, man, I mean, bombing, it's fun.
Well, Mike, go ahead. I was just going to say before we get into that, talk about from a junior standpoint, what age do you start young kids? We have several listeners that have younger children, and so they're asking a lot about golf and when. I know you guys have junior stuff. At what age does it start working with the younger ages?
Yeah, we recommend age 5 for our peewee sets. That's where we would start. I'd start younger than that with other types of like speed type activities. Essentially, you know, little kids, as soon as they're able to have enough muscle coordination to be able to make a movement, I'd love to see ballistic movements. I mean, I've got my 2.5-year-old can throw a ball like, you know, 20 feet across a room already. Like, those kind of things are great. Like, yeah. Developing early on, like, neuromuscular connection to be able to create speed movements is a huge thing. And when we've done a lot of research on looking at, like, long drive professionals and high-powered athletes in sports, the kind of things that they did when they were kids had a lot of, like, really fast movement type stuff involved. They weren't sitting on the couch for 10 years and then just magically became Jason Zubek. Like, it's definitely a process. And, you know, we work real closely with the guys at TPI and the junior programs that they've actually created and the research that they've done on junior development. I think some of the best in the world as far as long-term athletic development and really detailing out what types of things can be trained optimally at different ages for kids. Speed is, you know, one of the main speed windows we have in our lives is early, like, you know, ages 5 to 7 on average, you know, girls a little bit younger than that even. It's one of the best times in the life in a human being's life to develop, you know, speed type pieces, you know. And for kids, it's also really important because that's the time when they're also going through a lot of the, you know, genetic expression of kind of environmental training, if you will. So, you know, you put a kid in those activities and they do a lot of that kind of ballistic motion, you're going to find that they end up, you know, in their body with more fast twitch muscle fiber, different levels of connective tissue that can be very useful in creating explosive power. You know, we can't change our genetic code. You know, it's what we got, right? However, by good training as a development goes, we can use different parts of it that can optimize and give us a potential for a lot more speed and power later in life. So on a whole, I like to look at it like this. Like, you're going to create your athletic ceiling or your athletic capacity to create speed and power through the developmental process up until like your late teens, early 20s. Once you get there, once you get into your early 20s, you're not creating a higher capacity for speed and power for the rest of your life. It's done. You've got that chance when you're a kid to create the highest possible capacity. Now, so that's kind of what we're looking at when we're dealing with juniors. We're trying to create the highest capacity, giving those kids the potential to create explosive speed and power and be explosive athletes in whatever sport they want to play. Now, the other piece of that coin, that sounds a little bit, I would say, that sounds harsh, if you would, for somebody that's 50 and wants to get more swing speed. It's like, well, I thought we just talked about how all these people are getting more swing speed. Well, how many 40, 50-year-olds do you know that you would believe function at 100% of their athletic capacity, you know? I mean,
yeah, they're probably closer to 60 to 70.
Exactly. It's lower. I mean, we don't know. There's no way to test that. There's no way to know. But I can tell you through, you know, the amount of gains we've seen with just something as simple as doing overspeed training, most people are nowhere close to their capacity. So that's kind of what we're looking at with adults. We're looking at increasing where they are relative to their capacity. But as juniors, and maybe even way more importantly, that's the time when we can actually create a higher ceiling, create a higher potential for these kids later in life. And, I mean, heck, we did a lot of testing and a lot of like almost scouting type stuff for collegiate programs at our academies. I can tell you definitively, like, if you have kids out there that want to play collegiate golf and want to play professional golf, the number one thing that coaches all over the country are looking at is ball speed. They basically can say, look, you give me a kid with 180 mile an hour ball speed, I'll figure out the rest. You give me a kid that's scoring well and has 155 mile an hour ball speed with driver, we're probably not giving them a scholarship because they're going to get surpassed by that other guy real fast.
Yeah. So what I just took of that conversation, kind of summarizing it, these are really important for juniors because it helps create that capacity for speed, not only as a junior, but also helping them later on in life to continue to generate more speed. But then for everyone else, the adults, like you said, you kind of have this capacity already set and you're trying to find ways to unlock it and at least utilize more of that capacity or potential. Does that kind of sum it up?
Absolutely. So okay. Think of it, juniors, it's all about potential. For adults, it's all about, you know, just getting more use out of what you got.
Yeah, and the point you made is right on the money, where I see a lot of adults and they don't utilize any bit of their capacity at all. So even though
be kind, the adult, Mark, be kind.
We're just being real, Joe. So the adults, don't be upset by the fact that you're not going to have a higher ceiling, but be excited about the fact that you're not using much of your capacity and there's still room for you to gain speed.
Absolutely.
So how would you recommend using, let's say if I've got a person who's already have some sort of strength program or practice routine, how would you incorporate this within a strength program, or are they completely separate? Do you incorporate these within their normal practice schedule, or is it separate as well?
First of all, I think it would be a phenomenal thing if somebody's also doing gym work and working on functional mobility and stability and strength. All those things are major factors that contribute to your ability to create speed and power. So that's great. I look at it as like a good, better, best scenario, right? We've created this product so that anyone, regardless of if they have coaches or trainers or, you know, or if they're just, you know, a casual golfer that's never going to really do a lot of that extra work, can buy the product, take it home, do the training as listed on the website, and they're going to get results. They're going to get positive results in increasing their swing speed. I would say that better would be that, you know, you also have somebody that's looked at your body physically and you're working on some, you know, maybe deficiencies in mobility or stability or strength or any of the different things that could be there on an individual basis. And you have a gym program that's supplementing and complementing what you're doing with the speed training. I think that's certainly better. I think best would be that you have all of it, right? You're working in the gym. You also have a golf coach that's helping to work on the skill aspects and make sure the skill aspects of your game are matching up so that you're getting the most gains out of the speed gains that you're getting actually into the performance on your golf game. I think that's an awesome way to do it. I mean, that's obviously the best case scenario. You know, but, you know, we can go back and say, look, we do have that availability for everybody. Like, everybody is going to get some benefit just by adding this in. When you do add it in, I think it's a good thing for players to add it in when they're not tired. I think doing this, you know, when you're fatigued is kind of defeating the purpose, because if you can't make your body move at maximum intensity and as fast as possible, you're kind of, it doesn't matter. Like, going through the motions isn't going to make you faster. You have to actually make your body move faster during the training in order to get that neurological benefit.
Yeah. Training slower doesn't help you.
So, exactly. I mean, really easy, you know, quote there, if you will, is just like, in order to gain speed, you've got to train fast. I mean, it seems like a really simple thing, but if you don't make yourself move faster, you're never going to move faster in performance.
Makes sense. And so you've got these products, and you mentioned the word peewee, and you'd said 5 years old. So you've got products that range from almost toddler to even products that are designed for long drive players. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So we got the whole spectrum, and you can see all of that on our website. If you just go to the website store, it's got all of those listed and has like the different fitting guidelines for who should use what. But yes, you have junior sets that kind of go up. The one set's like that 5 to 7 year old range, then like 8 to 10. Then you have like your early high school junior set, senior ladies sets, men's, and then a whole way up through long drive professionals.
So you guys launched in 2020. Your Instagram account, I've been following it for years, and you launched this Counterbalance. And I mean, I didn't even read what it was. I just bought it. I just like,
well, thank you.
Because I'm a big believer in what you guys do, and I've seen it with just, I would say myself.
He's going to look up your email address and just start making up products and sending it to you.
Right,
now.
Right.
Joe's going to buy it.
I guess I need to make some product that costs more. Right?
Just go. I mean, I bought it literally, and then I literally stopped. I'm like, oh, why don't I just buy? And I looked. And so talk to us about, and I thought it was cool, this Counterbalance, right? We're seeing this in everything. Yep. Counterbalance shaft and putters, all the new technology in Counterbalance driver shafts. And so talk to us a little bit about your new product in the Counterbalance.
Yeah, so this is actually a result of a couple of years worth of research that we've done, basically assessing what the actual biomechanical advantages are in our overspeed training set, and then finding ways to even complement that and make it better. So one of the things that we always saw with overspeed training is we saw big gains in the player's ability to use the ground. So we would see increases in peak vertical force. We'd see increases in like the timing of like pressure transfer and things like that. So that was a big area that, you know, was a supporting factor to the gains in swing speed that players are getting. We also see huge gains, 12 to 15% gains in rotational velocity in the big muscles in the body. So like your pelvis segment, your torso, thorax segments, those we would see like 12 to 15% increases in rotational velocity doing the training with our normal set. When we started to get to like the hand and arm rotational velocities, club release speed, that sort of thing, those 12 to 15% gains tended to go down to about 5 to 6%. So we always thought that there was something missing there, or something that we could create a further increase, if you will, in that area of like hand and arm speed in the golf swing. And we started looking for ways to do that. And one of the things that we came across was counterweight training. And we had to modify some of the things that we had thought about, and where we had to do some research to figure out how to do it. But what we determined is, if you take a club that is the same weight as your normal driver, but change the MOI on that club significantly by putting a big counterweight on the back of it and making sure that counterweight is behind the player's hands in the on the grip, what you get is an effect of changing the physics of that of the whole motion in such a way that allows for that club to release a lot faster down toward impact, and it allows for the hands and arms to move significantly faster in the golf swing than normal. So you essentially get like an overspeed training effect targeted specifically at the hand and arm segments in the golf swing. So what we found with that, when we were doing our testing, is that when we did that way, people that had even been doing overspeed training for years could still get another pretty significant gain in swing speed. We don't have enough data to tell you that it's exactly 5% or 4% or 6% or what it is yet, but we will. But what we do see is that on 3D, we see that those, you know, where we were dipping down to those 5 to 6% gains in hand and arm rotational velocity, we can now match those 12 to 15% gains by adding in the counterweight training to a player's program. So that was sort of the piece that we were really trying to add on there. So what we did with that is we created and released that SuperSpeed C club. So it's a one club training system, has its own protocols that only use that counterweight training club. Three brand new protocols we launched when we launched that product. So it's all kind of its own standalone thing. Theoretically, and we're doing a lot of testing to prove this right now, but theoretically, we believe that using the two systems in combination should be the optimal path to getting the most speed gains possible. But we do see people that just use the overspeed training get good gains, as you guys know. Yeah. Using just the counterweight system, we also see people get really good gains. Again, theoretically, putting those two together and combining those should be the way to get the most gain for anybody.
It's kind of going back to your good, better, best scenario you had. So sure. Obviously, good would be using the normal program. Better would be putting everything together. So it sounds like you guys are trying to do everything you can to leave no stone unturned, if you will, for finding ways to untap either more potential or finding ways for those adults to kind of just use more of their capacity, which is pretty cool. I love, from a teaching standpoint, I love that you guys are doing so much research and are using 3D, how much you guys are involved with TPI as well. I think that's one of the things that I think is so cool, just because most of those other training products, I don't think, are doing that much research. So I really like that you guys are doing that.
Appreciate it. You know, we like to, you know, we've been really, really big believers in evidence-based coaching since day one. I mean, we're not going to recommend stuff to players unless we know what's coming out of our mouth is true. And that's just been one of the major philosophies we've always tried to stay true to.
One thing I've seen, having used it personally and also with some players, I think, and again, you've done some research on this, or maybe I'm just full of it. We'll find out which one. But I think I've seen players get a lot better just with using the radar as well. I've seen some people purchase the product without buying some sort of radar to track speed. And for the players that I have that have a radar and are consistently tracking it, and you almost kind of psychologically play a game with yourself and see where's my speed at today. Have you guys done any sort of testing with a group of people using radar versus not using it?
We have. And, you know, if it were me, I would always have a radar, because I'm just the kind of person that wants to see those results and wants to objectify it. What's really bizarre is when we do those studies and we actually don't let people know how fast the club's moving and don't tell them their data, we actually see almost exactly the same 5% gain in those people as we do with the ones that have the radar. So, I mean, is it something that we have been able to prove is going to make the training more effective? It isn't. The training is effective regardless. I think emotionally, mentally, I think for a lot of people, I would prefer they have the radar, because I think it does add that aspect to it.
Yeah.
The new ones that we're using now too, those PRGR radars that we swapped over to, are actually a fantastic little device. We've been seeing some really great success with those. So yeah, I mean, I absolutely would recommend people have the radars, but yeah, it's as far as, you know, that's one of the things when you do research on stuff, the results are not always what you expect, right?
So, yeah, for sure.
But that is kind of where that is with the radars. That's not to say though that I wouldn't recommend having it. And if you want to be able to track your progress, I think it's the only way to be able to truly track your progress. Without it, you just don't really know.
Well, it's like, it's measured gains.
Yeah, right. it's like trying to lose weight and without a scale. You don't know, well, how much did I lose? What am I at now? Yeah. So it's kind of the same thing. So I'll tell you what. So I've got, like I said earlier, I've got players that are as young as five, six, something in that range. And then I've got a lady who's close to 80. So it's one of those products that I continue to recommend every player. And like what we talked about earlier, you're going to see, for the most part, pretty significant difference in gains pretty quickly. And you've got, and the thing I always tell my players, these things work, but you have to use them. And your guys' protocols, I think, are really nice because it outlines everything really well. And Joe, and you and I talked about this earlier, where sometimes guys or even some gals don't always follow instructions. Sure. And I think it's nice having everything outlined really cleanly.
Well, without a doubt. And it's amazing to see just 10 minutes a day, 3 days a week, the impact that this tool can have on the game that we love. And that's what is so amazing. It's not hours upon hours upon hours. And obviously, if you want to play it the best, you got to be fit and all that's required, and practice and skill, and yes, chipping and putting. But this is one thing you can do 10 minutes, three times a week, and see an immediate impact and your enjoyability for the game and your results. If you're a competitive golfer, this is a must-have. Look at the PGA Tour. You can't go to an event and not look up and down the range, and they are all using them. And it's really cool. As we talked, 2015, you're at the show. I remember being there and being exhausted, and as that day is at 360-degree range, and it's hot. Sometimes it's cold, but that year it was warm.
This year was freezing.
It was
windy.
Oh, man.
And I remember getting around, and you guys are out there, and you had, like, the Madonna mics on, and you're talking. I'm like, what in the world are these guys doing? They're swinging sticks. But I stopped and just needed a break, and I'm listening. I'm like, this is unbelievable. And I watched. You were bringing people up and having them go through the protocol, mm-hmm. and you're measuring the before and then after, and the impact they had. And really what was cool is the look on a lot of those guys' faces and a lot of those pros. And you could tell they bought into it because they took them back to their pro shops. They took them back to their shops. The PGA players have adopted this. The LPGA players, the college teams have adopted this. It works. So for our listeners, superspeedgolf.com. All kinds of information is there. If you're in the greater Cincinnati area or you're in the Ann Arbor area, you can go to our sponsor, Miles of Golf. They have them there for you as well. Cannot say enough positive things about this company and Mike, what you guys have done, your research into it. It is not a gimmick. It's unbelievable. And the whole goal is to keep it inside the stakes, but hit it far, man. Hit it far and make the game more enjoyable.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me on today. Like, I mean, we're just trying to, you know, better and help people have more fun with the game. You know, obviously, you know, I'm a big believer that hitting it further is one of the fastest ways to do that. So thank
Without
you guys
a doubt.
Again.
Beautiful. All awesome. Right. Rocky
Thanks so
Mountain
much, Mike.
High. Big Mike from Colorado. Thanks for being on the show, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Hey everyone, on behalf of Joe and I, thanks so much for listening to this episode of Inside the Stakes. We hope you enjoyed it. As a reminder, please subscribe to this podcast and be sure to share it with your friends. Until next time, keep it inside the stakes.